Okay, I think we are going to start. Next week we are going to have a challenge. This was, I think, the last week I could get away with starting it. Or at least trying to start at 8:10. So I think we are going to be looking at an 8:30 start for next week. We'll try to end the same time. I'll just shorten this year a little bit. We'll try to. I don't think I can take this year past 9:30. I'll start to drop, let alone that. So next week, and then I'm actually away for 2 Monday nights. So we have to have a discussion about whether or not to do one session on a Sunday night instead of a Monday night, or to just skip 2 more weeks. But so I will let you. If I do 2 on the Chacham on the next piece, then 1, 2. Maybe 3 more. In other words, 2 plus about 5 more in total. So my guess is we're going to, which is good. I mean, that was sort of take us to the early June, is what I had anticipated. So we're a couple of weeks behind where I wanted to be initially, but then when I decided to sort of slow it down and do 2 weeks per instead of 1, it gave us, we spread it out a little bit, but I think it was, I found it easier to work with. So. All right. What are we doing, Kohelet? It's Monday. It's Kohelet night. All right. It's been so long. What has it been, a month? How was it? 3 weeks? 3 weeks. Wow. Not this year. All right. The last chapter that we looked at was a very intense piece from the Nehemiah, who basically went on an attack about reward and punishment. And the whole concept of divine retribution, reward and punishment, does it work, does it not work? The chaos and anarchy with which God runs the world, and threw his hands up and said that ultimately the only thing, the only reality, therefore, is the reality of this world and not the next, and there's nothing matters in the world. Do what you want, enjoy the world, go for the roller coaster ride. There's no meaning or substance to it anyway. And at the very end, he threw the gauntlet down at the Chacham. And he made a comment about, he told a little story about a city that was attacked, and the Chacham saved everybody in the city, but because he was poor and he was impoverished, nobody remembered who he was and what he was. He was worthless and valueless and insignificant. And Udvarav enam nishma'im, and his words went unheard or unheeded. So he may have been the hero of the day, but it didn't last long. That's where we left off. So we are at chapter 9, verse 17, Perek Tet, Pasuk, Yud, Zayin. Looking around to see who's who from the regulars are missing. Chapter Pasuk Tet Perek Tet Pasuk Yud Zayin. Divrei Chachamim Benachat Nishmaim Mizakat Moshel Baksilim. Very famous phrase, often quoted by the Baal Musar. Words of the wise Benachat Nishmaim Mizakat Moshel Baksilim. It's often translated as the words of the wise when spoken quietly are heard over the yells of the, or the screams of the ruler of fools. That's how it's usually translated, and it makes sense. It's also possible to translate the word benachat not so much as a function of the volume in which the words are spoken, but the ease with which they are absorbed. Divrei chachamim benachat nishma'im mizakat yoter moshabaksilim, meaning that the words of the wise are more readily, more easily heard and absorbed than the yelling and the screaming of the one who rules amongst fools, Moshel Baksilim. I will come back to that in a moment. Let's go through the whole chapter and see what it says. Tova chochma mikle krav. Wisdom is better than utensils of war. Vechote echad ya'abed tova harbe. And one chote. Now chote means sometimes translated as, well, it's usually translated as sin. Here I think actually it has a different translation, namely, here I think it's one, the word chote actually means to miss a target. And here I think that's probably the more accurate context. One missed opportunity or one missed target can destroy a great deal of good. We'll come back to that phrase too. Zivuve mavet, yavish yabia shemen rokeach. Dead flies can spoil the perfumed oil of the apothecary. Yakar mechochma mikavod sichlut ma'at. Outweighing the wisdom and the honor is a little bit of foolishness. Lev chacham lemino velev ksil lismolo. The heart of the wise is to the right, the heart of the fool is to the left. Vegam baderech kishesachal holech libo chaser. In the path that the fool walks, his heart is missing. V'yamar lakol sachalhu. And he says to all, he is a fool. Im ruach ha-moshel ta'ale alecha, if the ruler comes against you, mekomcha al tanach, do not move from your place. Ki marpe yaniach chata'im gdolim. For healing can resolve many sins or many misses, depending on how you translate the word chait. Yesh ra'ava iti tachat ha-shamash. Kishgagash yotza milifnei ha-shalit. There's an evil under the sun, like an error that has been perpetrated by the ruler. Nitan ha-sechel b'meromim rabim. The fool is sitting on a high. Va'ashirim b'shefu yeshefu. But the wealthy, in contrast to the fool, they sit at the bottom of the hierarchy of society. Reiti avadim al susim. I've seen servants, slaves, riding on the horses. Bissarim holchim kavadim. And the sar, the minister, the one who should be the ruler, is walking like a fool, like a servant. Allah. That verse remind you of anything? What does it remind you of? Purim. Does it remind you of the Haman Mordechai image? Chofer gumatz bo yipol. One who digs a hole will fall into it. Uparetz gadeh yishchenu nachash. And the one who tries to put up a fence will be bitten by the snake. Masia avanim yatzev bahem. The one who tries to move the rocks will be hurt by them. Bokea etzim yisachen ba. And the one who tries to gather the sticks or to break the sticks will be harmed by them. If the iron is not sharp and you do not sharpen its face, b'chayalim yigaber, whole discussion about how to translate that phrase, then the soldiers have to work extra hard, or does the word lo apply to the second phrase as well, b'chayalim lo yigaber, the soldiers will be unsuccessful. In all cases it means the same, that you can't fight a war with a blunt instrument. Bitron hechsher chokhmah. And the advantage at the end of the day goes to wisdom. Im yishoch hanachash belo lachash, the serpent will attack, will bite, without any enchantment. Ve'en yitron lebal alashon, there is no advantage to the one who speaks. Divrei fi chacham chen, the words of the wise are beautiful. V'siftot ksil tevalenu, and the words of the fool, he will swallow him. Tchilat divrei piu sichlut, v'acharit piu halelut ra'ah. The fool, his opening words are foolishness, his closing words are foolishness, everything he says is foolishness. V'asachal ya'bed varim, the fool speaks many things. Lo yeda ha'adam ma sheyeh v'asheyeh mi'acharav mi'agid lo, who knows what will be. Man cannot know what will be, and what will be, and what will be after him, he cannot be made to know. Amalak silimti agenu, toil of the fool makes him tired. Ashelo yadal alechet alir, doesn't know how to make it to the city. Ilach eretz shemalkech na'ar, woe to you, land, if your king is a child, is a fool. V'sarayech baboker yochelu, and your ministers eat in the morning. God forbid they should eat breakfast. Terrible. Ashrech eretz shemalkech ben chorim, happier you, O land, whose king is free. V'sarayech be'et yochelu, and your ministers eat in the proper time. B'gvura v'lo bashti, in the time of strength and not in the time of drinking. Batzaltayim yimacha mekareh, through laziness the roof will cave in. U'b'shiflut yadayim idlof habayit, and in the laziness of the hands, the house will leak. Bishok osim lechem, v'yayin samach chayim, enjoyment, they make bread, wine rejoices life. Ve'kesef yaneh et hakol, and money answers all needs. Pasuk Chaf does something very interesting. Gam b'mada'acha melech al tekalel, in your u'b'chadrei mishkavcha al tekalel ashir, in your innermost chambers, in your most intimate moments, do not curse the king, do not curse the wealthy. What happens in that verse? Very interesting phenomenon happens in that verse, different from the entire chapter. What happens in that verse textually that is different from the entire chapter? Changes person to second person. This entire chapter is written in third person until this last verse. This last verse changes to second person. Even though it starts with a conjunctive word, it starts with gam, but nonetheless, it is a change in person. We go from third person to second person, and usually a change in person indicates a change in person. Right. Usually. And certainly we have seen that many times. And actually the calling card of the second person form of speech in Kohelet is always, or has always been, the Yireh Elokim. The only personality of Kohelet who has spoken in second person to you as if he's giving you Musa. The Chacham has spoken in third person, the Amal and the Nehneh in first person. Some exceptions, but for the most part, that's essentially the representation of the various forms of speech. And I think that holds true here as well. And this last verse, therefore, I'm assuming, is a break to a new speech. Who it is and what he is saying, we will come back to Bezrat Hashem in a couple of weeks' time. Let's go back to this chapter, which seems to be incredibly disjointed, maybe more so than previous chapters that we've addressed. But the first question we always ask is, who's speaking? We have four options, and in this case, I think the choices are very limited. Clearly not the Amal, not a word of The Amal, we talked about the fact that the Amal wrote himself out of the book already in chapter 6. The Nehenah, unlikely. First of all, he wrote himself out of the book already in chapter 8. And second of all, there's not a word about eating, drinking, enjoyment, or anything that bespeaks of the philosophy of the Nehenah. So by process of elimination, that leaves us with the Chacham, the wise guy, I like the way you put that, right? It leaves us with the Chacham. And in fact, it makes a lot of it sounds like the Chacham, because most of the verses speak about the contrast between the Chacham and the Ksil or Sachal, essentially referring to the same word. The Sachal and the Ksil are both words that refer to the fool. It's an interesting play on language, because the reversal of letters is a very, very common phenomenon in Tanakh. There are many words which mean the exact same thing, but their letters are reversed. The classic examples are Kesev and Keves, both meaning the same thing, the form of an animal, like a sheep. Other examples, Keves and Kesev. Other examples? Simla and Salma. Right, both referring to a garment or a dress. In modern Hebrew we say Simla. In biblical Hebrew you will find both Simla and Salma. Very common phenomenon in biblical Hebrew to reverse letters for the same word. Here, sachal and ksil, essentially referring to the same phenomenon, the fool. What's unique about this one is that both the ksil and the sachal are characterized by the absence of seichel. Right, and that's the interchangeable samach and the sin, and the sin, which is also often letters interchange. But in this case, if you interchange the samach and the sin, you literally change the meaning of the word 180 degrees. The ksil and the sachal are characterized by the absence of seichel. I like that little tidbit. And both stand in contrast to the Chacham lev, chacham bimino, lev ksil lismolo, and you'll see the constant references to the chacham in contrast to the ksil from the very beginning, and that brings us back to the start of the chapter. We're going to try to break it down piece by piece. The opening phrase, pasuk back to perek tet pasuk yud zayin. Divrei chachamim benachat nishmaim mizakat moshel baksilim. Again, right from the very beginning, you have in this verse a contrast between who? The Chacham and the Ksil. The Chacham and the opposite of the Chacham, which is the Ksil. You have it in the Haggadah too, and it's an interesting phenomenon in the Haggadah where the Haggadah changes this phenomenon. In the Haggadah we talk about four children, right? And they contrast each other. The Chacham, the Rasha, the Tam, and the She'eno Yodei Lishol. Only problem with the way we have the four sons in the Haggadah is that there is no contrast to the Chacham, because the opposite of the Chacham is a Ksil. Whereas in the Haggadah, the opposite of the Chacham is the Rasha. So there's two answers to that question. Answer number one is that in the Yerushalmi, the Tam is replaced by the word Tipesh, which is a fool. Which means that at least from the Yerushalmi's point of view, the opposite of the Chacham is not the Rasha, the opposite of the Chacham is the Tipesh, or the Tam. But the other option, the other possibility is that the word Ksil, referring to the fool, had become in Tanakh already synonymous with the Rasha. The notion of foolhardiness, the notion of the Ksil, or the Sachal, was essentially in synonymous with the no with the no good, must be a phrase, not the opposite of a do-goer, a good doer, is a no good doer, right? Is the an evildoer, right? The opposite, the sachal or the ksil was already identified in Mishle and here in Kohelet as well as the quintessential evil, ksil. Eov refers to the ksil as the personification of evil. Mishle does as well. So in that context, the opposite of the chacham could be understood as the Rasha. And that's probably the context in which our Haggadah formulates the contrast between the chacham and the Rasha, rather than the chacham and the ksil as it appears in Tanakh. He can be, but not. He can be. And the context here is a reference to a specific one of our personalities. We'll see whom, but usually not. Usually, it comes with a moral baggage, so to speak. Divrei chachamim benachat nishmaim mizakat Moshe baksilim. The words of the wise are heard more readily or more quietly than the words of, than the yelling, the zaka, of the fool. To what is he referring specifically?
The wise man speaks with reason. He speaks with a soft voice. The fool with emotion, loud voice, but doesn't make any sense.
That's the substance of what he's saying. To what is he referring specifically? Meaning? Right, the Nehenen, in his last speech, spoke out against Chochmah, and specifically, what was the last words he said? Take a look at Pasuk Tet Zayin. Our problem is that we had a 3-week break in between. If we didn't have a 3-week break, it would have been much easier to see. The last sentence of the previous speech was the Nehenen. Amarti ani, tova Chochmah migvura. I said that wisdom is better than foolishness. That wisdom is better than strength. V'chochmat ha-misken b'zuya. But the words of the wise who is poor is despised. Udvarav einam nishma'im. And his words go unheard because he's insignificant. He's a nobody. He doesn't have any money. He doesn't have any power. He's an insignificant nothing. And therefore, as much as he is a chacham, he is also Dvarav Einam Nishma'im. Nobody hears him, nobody heeds him, nobody listens. To which the Chacham responds and says, you, the Nehneh, may speak louder. You may even speak longer. You may make a lot of noise. Za'akat Moshel Baksilim. You may rule amongst fools. And you may be right that for the most part the words of the wise enam nishma'im, but divrei chachamim benachat nishma'im mizakat Moshe Baksilim. But the words of the wise have a way of penetrating quietly and profoundly far more than all the noise of the fools. As an example, 2,500 years ago or so. Anybody remember the name of the ruler of China? 6th century BCE. Anybody remember the name of the ruler of China? His name was Duke Ding of Lu. A massive, massive king, a powerful king. Created a dynasty and conquered land. Nobody remembers who he was, right? Contemporary to a philosopher by the name of Confucius. Suddenly the lights go off. Right? Sometimes it doesn't take a lot of noise to make a big impact. Divrei chachamim benachat nishma'im mizakat Moshe baksil. Sometimes it takes just saying the right thing in the right way, in the right tone, and fuse those words with meaning and substance, and they penetrate far more profoundly. Then the Chacham goes on, and he says, Tova chochma miklei krav. Wisdom is better than utensils of war, which is essentially similar to weapons of war, which is essentially similar to what the Nehenneh himself agreed, that Tova chochma migvura. I'm going to skip that phrase for a moment, and let's look at Pasuk Yud. Zvuvei Mavet. By the way, it wasn't only the Nehenah who said this. The Yirei Elokim said a very similar phrase. Sorry, the Chacham himself said a very similar phrase earlier. HaChochma ta'oz lechacham me'asara shalitim asher ayu ba'ir. The wisdom is stronger, more potent for the warrior than 10 soldiers in the city. Zvuvei Mavet yavish yabia shemen rokeach. Dead flies and spoil the ointment, the oil of the apothecary. Yakar mechochma mikavod sichlut ma'at. Better, weightier, dearer than wisdom and honor is a little bit of foolishness. What's going on? That's exactly what it means. It's exactly what it means, and it is essentially two halves of a verse. One is a mashal, and the other is the nimshal. One is the parable to the one is the metaphor for the other. If I draw it out for you, Zvuvei Mavet, Shemen Rokeach. What is the relationship between dead flies and beautiful perfumed oil? The answer is. Right? Yavish. That all it takes is one fly. You know the expression fly in the ointment? You know where it comes from?
Right here.
Well, its original source is from here. The actual phrase, I looked up the actual phrase today, I was just curious. So the phrase is attributed to an 18th century text called A Practical Treatise Concerning Humility. And the phrase in its context reads, "Tis that dead fly in the ointment of the apothecary." But I don't think that's the source of it. I think the source of it is our verse. Zavuve mavet, the fly in the ointment. What does a fly in the ointment mean? You have this great plan, you have this great process, something very beautiful, something very powerful, and all it takes is one dead fly to spoil an entire vat of the most expensive perfume oil that the greatest artisans could create. Because it is the nature of that which we seek. It is the nature of something which is beautiful, expensive, significant. It is the nature of the perfection that we seek in the Shemen Rokeach. That once you throw one fly into it, so it's one tiny little fly, big deal. But the result is, nobody's going to touch it. Right? Take the fly out. Nobody's going to touch it. Shemen zvuvei mavet yavi shemen rokeach. The flip side is the second half of the verse. Yakar mechochma mekavod. Outweighing wisdom and honor is, what does he say? Sichlut ma'at. A little bit of foolishness. In other words, I think he's attempting to understand why it is that in the course of events, the fool is heard so much more readily, or the wise man is so rare, and the chacham's advice so often unheeded. Why is it that that in the normal scheme of things, the Chacham, who really is the most important person in the entire scheme of society, is often shunted aside, and the fool seems to be running the show? And I think his message is that it's not a function of the ineffectiveness of Chochmah, it's not a function of the fact that wisdom is less correct in objectively when compared to foolishness, as the fool wanted to say, or as the Nehne wanted to say, but rather, it is the very nature of wisdom to seek perfection. It is the nature of wisdom to seek the grand scheme of things and to try to understand it and pull it all together and be able to give insights that others don't see. But it doesn't take much to destroy that wisdom.
And nobody listens to the poor man who's wise, but if he were rich or if he were important, then
he has power in the world. Then he has Moshe Baksilim. Whereas here, so you seek Chokhmah, you seek Shemun Mokeach, you seek complexity, you seek perfection. The greater the system, the greater the perfection that you seek, the more open to flaws and opportunities for failure you have. The greatest achievements of humankind, the most complex scientific creations of human intellectual power, can be destroyed with one loose screw. Right? An entire space shuttle could explode in space because of one small tile. It is the nature of perfection to be complex and to be easily ruined with one fly in the ointment, so to speak. Chote echad ya'abed chokhma harbeh. Right, that's the previous expression. Chote echad ya'abed tova harbeh. One miss, one sin, one loose screw can destroy all of the greatest wisdom that created. That's a weakness in wisdom. But it's also a function of its strength, because it is by its very nature the attempt to seek perfection. So if I had to weigh what's more readily identifiable in the world, are there more wise philosophers and saged people in the world, or are there more fools in the world? By sheer numbers, the answer is, right? By sheer numbers, the answer is? Say it louder. Fools win, hands down. I think we would agree. And so the Nehenneh would say, you see, the Nehenneh wins. To the Chacham, that means that they're all a bunch of fools, because wise individuals, people of real Chokhmah, of real wisdom, whose words are profound and have an impact for generations to come, seek perfection in their understanding. It's much harder to come by, but it's worth the effort. That's the opening declaration. And then he goes on and he says, Pasuk Bet, Lev Chacham Limino Velev Ksil Lismolo, following along the same lines. I have two contrasting personalities in the world. The Chacham on the one hand, and the fool on the other. I've already told you, if he's referring back to the Nehenneh, that this fool is the Nehenneh. We'll see, we'll change that definition momentarily. But for now, this fool is synonymous with the Nehenneh. The wise, Lev Chacham Limino. What does that mean? It doesn't mean that the wise man's heart is on the right side of his body and the fool's heart is on the left side of his body. But rather, the right and left are synonymous usually in Tanakh. They're synonymous with good and bad, or right and wrong. That's not necessarily a political statement. That's just the nature of the bias of the right hand representing strength and the left hand representing weakness. Therefore, the right hand is usually a symbol of that which is correct and the left that which is wrong. Lev Chacham Limino. The heart of the wise man is usually smarter, righter, better, and therefore directs him towards the right path. Not necessarily, again, it's not a political statement. Velev ksil lismolo, and the heart of the fool therefore leads him to the left path. You're familiar, of course, with the famous Brisker debate over Shana B'Shabbos and Sicha B'Shabbos of the Vilna Gaon. Never heard that debate? The Vilna Gaon? I think it's apocryphal and somewhat humorous, but there's a yeshivish story that goes like that: the two yeshiva bachim were having a debate as to whether the nature of Shabbos is supposed to be Shena b'Shabbos or Sicha b'Shabbos, Ta'anug. What's better on Shabbos, to have a good shluf or to sit and learn? Is it Shena, sleeping on Shabbos, that is the Ta'anug, the pleasure of Shabbos, or is it Sicha, the conversations and learning, that is the... So the joke goes that the answer was Lev Chacham Limino, Lev Ksil Lismolo. I'll do that again. Lev Chacham Limino, Lev Ksil Lismolo. That's the joke you used to tell in yeshiva. You wanted to go to sleep shop this afternoon Anyway. All right. The associations of these psukim that come to mind, they just can't resist. V'gam b'derech k'shesachal holech libo chaser. In the journey that the sachal goes, his heart is missing. The heart that sent him to the journey of the left path or the wrong path is also the journey that is absent of that heart. Right? He's missing the heart. V'amar lakol sachalhu. And therefore, everywhere he goes, he says to every person, he announces himself as, here I am, I'm the fool. Readily recognizable. Why is the fool so readily recognizable and the chacham is not? Why is the chacham so much less recognizable than the ksil? Because the fool speaks louder and more often. Right? And that's exactly what he says. The Amar Lakol Sechalu, everywhere he goes, he announces that he's the fool. There's a rabbinic expression of the same idea. Siman L'Chochma. Anybody know the expression? Siman L'Chochma Shtika. The sign of the wise is silence. A wise man doesn't always have to speak. Whereas the fool always has to have something to say. He announces he's a fool wherever he goes. Im ruach hamoshel ta'ale alecha, if the ruler comes upon you, mekomcha al tanach, don't move, don't leave your position. Ki marpe yaniach chata'im gdolim. Because a little bit of healing can push aside great misses. What are we talking about? Let's start from the first half of that phrase. Im ruach ha-moshel ta'ale alecha. Who is the moshel? Who's the ruler? Who? Who's the ruler? Stuart, it's on the tip of your tongue. No, not yet. Mm-hmm. Who? In the words of the Chacham, in this passage, who is the ruler? Say it louder. Mm-hmm. The fool. How do you know? Because he said it in the opening phrase, Moshel Baksilim. The fool is described as the one who rules amongst fools. The ruler in this world, the one who is the most powerful in this world, is the Ksil. Whether he's the Nehneh or the Amal at this point in time doesn't matter. But the power in this world goes to the fools. He's called Moshel Baksilim in the opening phrase. Divrei Chachamim benachat nishmeim zakat Moshel Baksilim. So im ruach ha-moshel tale alecha. And now he speaks to the Chacham. If the spirit of the ruler should come upon you, mekomcha al tanach, don't move. In contrast to the ksil, what is the ksil doing? Yelling and gam baderech kishesachal holech libo chaser. The ksil is journeying, walking, moving. The ksil is moving physically, In the context of Kohelet, I would even go so far as to say the Ksil is moving ideologically. He's a moving target. But we're not there yet. If this fool who is ruling the world should come upon you, don't move, meaning hold your ground, stay your position. Don't look at it from the point of view of power. It's not power that speaks of who in this debate is right or wrong. Because even though we have said that despite the fact that we seek perfection and the tiniest fly in the ointment or little bit of foolishness or folly can destroy all of the great wisdom, it is equally true that the marpeh echad, that one well-placed word, one well-placed insight, one profound understanding can, what's the expression he uses? Yaniach chata'im gdolim. Can outweigh, can push aside all of the great misses. One correctly placed word. Word to the right ruler, word to the negotiated comment to the right moment. The wise man has his place in society. He may not be the ruler, he may not be in control, but every once in a while, even the most powerful rulers on earth will turn to their wise, sage counsel and seek their advice. And they can make all the difference in the world. You just have to have the patience to wait for that moment. Everybody with me so far? Yesh ra'ara iti tachat ha-shamash. There is a terrible evil under the sun. Like an error that has emerged from before the ruler. Notice the change in language. Before he called the ruler a moshel. And here he calls the ruler a shalit. What's the difference between a moshel and a shalit? What's the difference between a moshel, conceptually, what's the difference between a moshel and a shalit? What's the difference between a memshala and a shilton? What is the difference in English between a government and a regime? Regime, you would use, the word regime you would use in the context of something which is autocratic and dictatorial, absolute, power. Moshel comes from the word memshala. Well, the memshala comes from the word moshel. Memshala means government. Government is those who are in a position to govern. Moshel is to govern. Shalit is to rule. What's the difference between govern and rule?
One's more legitimate.
Maybe, although kings with autocratic and absolute power can be just as legitimate, but I think one certainly connotes a greater amount of power than the other. Moshel is whoever happens to be in power at the time, the present ruler, the present government, the present Moshel, Memshala, it's called a Moshel. Whereas a Shalit denotes a power that is immutable. Ein shilton b'yam ha-mavet. V'asher dvar melech shilton. We had the word shilton in Kohelet a few times. We had it back in chapter 5 and in chapter 7. Dvar melech shilton, the word of the king is absolute power. It's absolute authority. Ein shilton b'yam ha-mavet, on the day of death. There is no authority, there is no power, there is no way to overpower the angel of death. Those are words that denote authority. Whereas Moshel is a much softer term. It's a temporary, momentary, whoever happens to be in power at the time. He called the Moshel, when the Chacham used the word Moshel, he was referring to the Ksil. Do you think for a moment the Chacham was to assign to the Ksil absolute, total authority and power of regime? Or was he commenting on the fact that in society today, it happens to be so that the Moshel is more often than not the Nehenah rather than the Chacham? You understand the difference? In other words, when he said earlier he called the Nehenah a Moshel, he wasn't assigning to the Nehenah absolute power. He was essentially commenting on a phenomenon of society. It happens to be that in the normal course of societal events, more often than not, who is running the show? Who is in control? The Nehenah. Not because that's how it has to be, but because that's how, at any given moment, that's who the Moshel is. Whereas when you talk about a Shalit, you're talking about somebody or something with authority, power, control. So the Shalit is not necessarily the same as the Moshel. That's my point. My point here is that I think the Shalit in this verse is not the same as the Moshel in the previous two references. In the previous two references, the Moshel was the Nehenah. Here the Shalit is somebody else completely. And there is an evil under the sun, kishagaga shiatzam lifnei shalit, like an error that has been perpetrated by the Shalit. The Shalit, whoever it may be, or he may be, the Shalit has made a terrible error. What's the error? So let's see what the error is, and then we'll know who the Shalit is. Nitan ha-sechel b'mromim rabim. The fool, the sechel. Remember the ksil and the sechel? Opposite. Nitan ha-sechel b'mromim rabim. The fool is placed on a pedestal, is placed on high, placed in position of authority. Va'ashirim b'shefel yeshev. And the wealthy sit in the lowest part of society. Now here the word ashirim in this context is misplaced in a sense, because we haven't been talking about the Ashir. The Ashir is a term used by the Amal. The Amal is out of the picture a long time ago. But the Ashir is the one who is wealthy in abundance, has in abundance what the first individual has nothing of. Right? Can be wealthy in many things. So if the wealth refers to the abundance of that which the personality in question has nothing, then the wealthy is the Chacham. So Nitana Secha Bamromim, here's the oddity of it. Who's running the show? Who is in the upper echelons of society? Who is sitting in the highest positions in the land? The Secha. And who is Bashefel Yeshevu, and who sits in the lowest echelons of society? The wise, the wisdoms, the philosophers. Ra'iti Avadim Al Susim. I see slaves, servants, those who deserve to be slaves and servants, those who deserve to lick my feet at my wisdom and their foolishness. I see riding the horses, and riding the horse is always a symbol of power and authority. How do I know? Right, there's the story of Haman. Visarim, and the ministers, meaning those who deserve to be ministers, those who deserve to be in positions of decision making in this world, holchim kavadim al aretz. They walk on the ground like they're slaves. Therefore, the world is topsy turvy. There's a powerful story in the Gemara in Pesachim. It's an unbelievable story. It's actually a reflection of this exact passage. Gemara tells the story of one of the sages, Rav Yosef, the son of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Gemara says when Rav Yosef got sick, he had what in today's vernacular is known as a near-death experience. What's a near-death experience?
He saw the white light.
That's exactly right. So here's the way the Gemara reads. Kehad Rav Yosef, Breid Rav Yishua ben Levi, Chalash ve'itnagir. Rav Yosef, son of Rav Yishua ben Levi, was sick, and he died. Kihada, when he came back, right, you understand the reference to the near-death experience? Amar le'avua mai chazit. His father said to him, what have you seen? Amar le, he said to him, olam hafuch ra'iti. I saw a world upside down. Elyonim lamata, v'tachtonim lamala. Those who are on high, I saw them down below. And those down below, I saw them on high. Meaning? Right? That the societal hierarchy that places those who are void of spiritual depth and intellectual substance on the positions of authority and power to run this world are now down below where they belong, and those who are in the societal hierarchy of the world we live in, the wise, intellectual, spiritual, profound individuals who should be honored and respected by the world and today are downtrodden and ignored, they are in fact on the top of society. I saw the world to come. I saw where the Olam Ha'emet, the world of truth, the world where the value system is reflected by the Rabbanu Shalom and not by people's pocketbooks or whatever misguided values and judgments they have. Amar lo, his father said to him, Bini Olam Barur Ra'ita. You saw the clear world. You saw the real world. This is the world that is upside down. What you saw was the world that's right side up. We are living in the world that is upside down. It's a powerful Gemara. It's a Gemara Pesachim and Daf Nun. And essentially, the passage here is a reflection of the same idea. What does the Chacham look at the world and see? He sees a world run by fools. He says the world is upside down. And this is a terrible evil. And this is a shgaga shiyatza milifnei ha-shalit. Now who's the shalit? Who made a terrible mistake in setting the world in such a way that the fools are on top and the wise men are down below? There is only one person that meets that criteria. The Rabbanu Shalom. Who is the shalit in Sefer Kohelet up until now? When the Yireh Elokim spoke of Asher Dvar Melech Shilton, the word of the king is absolute power and you have to obey. Who is he referring to? The Rabbanu Shalom. To which the Chacham turns in a scathing attack on the way the Ribbono Shel Olam has conducted the world, or created the world, and he says, Kishkagashi, it's Amlif Neshalit. This is a fundamental error in the way the world was created. Who should be running this world? Chacha. You place the world into the hands of fools. And you know what the result of placing the world in the hands of the fools is? You know what the result of such a phenomenon is? What do you think the result is? Excuse me?
My hospital?
Close, right? That's essentially what he says. Right? The result is that if you put the world in the hands of the fools, what you're going to get is a very foolish world. If you'd only let the wise intellectual philosophers run this world, the world would be a better place. I'm not completely convinced, by the way, that that's the case, but that's a separate debate. But for the sake of Kohelet, and if you put the world into the hands of the philosophers, then the world will be a better place. And to prove it, he moves his sights away from the target of the Ne'eneh. He's spoken about the Ne'eneh enough. Now it's time to throw a salvo or two at his other colleagues. Where are his other colleagues? Yamal and the Yireh Elokim. So if he's going to run this world, he's got to be the candidate that that wins the nomination over not only the fool, but over the builder and the Yirei Elokim as well. He's got to outshine them all. So he will now prove his point. Pasuk Chet. Chofer gumatz bo yipol. If you dig a hole, the one who digs the hole is going to fall into it. Why? Who digs the hole? The builder. Why is he going to fall into it? Why is the builder going to fall into the hole that he digs? Because you need the wise man to sit there and say, don't fall in the hole. Right? Something to dig the hole. Because somebody's got to stand there with the plans. Somebody's got to stand there with the architectural design and say, the hole starts here and stops here, and if you dig a little bit further, you're going to collapse. For that you need, not the builder, but the architect. The relationship between the Amal and the Chacham is the relationship between the builder and the architect. Uforetz gader yishchen nachash. The one who breaches the fence is going to get bitten by the snake. Why? Because the builder is so gung-ho, ready to build his next construction, that he's prepared to take what do they call the machine? The backhoe. Right, the backhoe with the bulldozer. Right? He's going to take his bulldozer and he's going to go hit the ground and start the construction for his next major project without thinking through the implications of what's there, what's not there, what's on the other side of the wall he's about to take down. And if you don't think it through, you could have all the intent to build the greatest skyscraper in the world, and what you're going to end up with is a big hole in the ground. Or bitten by a snake. How many super-sized investments have gone awry because the advice was not well given? People's whole lives, fortunes have been thrown down the tubes because of investments that were unwise. Masiya avanim yatzev behem. You move stones, you're going to fall, or going to be hurt by them. Bokeh etzim yisachen bam. If you break wood, you're going to it's going to endanger you. In all of these cases, these are all acts of the builder, all of whom of which need to be guided by the Chacham in order to have any success in this world. And the most profound, if you don't sharpen the axe, if you don't sharpen the instrument of war, your soldiers are going to fail. And ultimately, therefore, the advantage belongs to Yitron Hachsher Chochma. The advantage belongs to the Chacham. So given a choice, who would you rather be running this world? The Amal, the builder, or the Chacham? If you had to choose, you had to nominate the candidate for supreme ruler, would it be the Chacham or the Amal? Right, the Chacham. And if you had to nominate the choice between the Chacham and the Yireel and the Nehneh, or the Ksil, we've already established that that's a no-brainer. So far we've ruled out two out of our four possible candidates for supreme ruler, right? Or sub-supreme ruler. Next, im yishach hanachash belo lachash ve'en yitron leval halashon. The serpent can bite without any sound. And there's no advantage to the master of the tongue. That's a very powerful metaphor. What does it refer to? So it's often quoted, by the way, in its midrashic context, it's often quoted in the application of Lashon Hara. But the Baal HaLashon is a reference to Lashon Hara. So the Gemara talks about אמר יש לקיש, אם ישוך הנחש בלא לחש ואין יתון לבעל הלשון לעתיד לבוא מתקבצות כל החיות הבאות אצל נחש, God will take all of the animals and bring them together near the, by, together with the serpent. אומרות, and they will each say as follows, ארי, or he will say, ארי דורס ואוכל. The lion pounces and consumes. זאב טורף ואוכל. The wolf pounces, tears, and eats. Ata mana yesh lecha? They'll say to the serpent, you, what benefit do you get? You bite. You don't do anything. You bite a person, you kill. But then you have no advantage from it. You don't do anything. You don't eat. When a lion attacks, he attacks his prey in order to consume the prey. When a snake attacks, he attacks and leaves. So what advantage is there? B'chima yitron lebaal alashon. What advantage has the Baal HaLashon? What advantage has the master of the tongue? Says Rish Lakish, that's the analogy to Lashon Hara. That's the analogy to Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara bites, but gains no benefit from it. There's no personal gain from it. That's the Midrashic interpretation. But if I take the Midrashic interpretation one step further, and I analyze the Pasuk from the perspective of the difference between the Nachash and the Aryeh, when the Nachash and any other animal, the difference between the way the serpent attacks and the way any other animal attacks is that when the serpent attacks, it's silent. Whereas a lion, when a lion attacks, it always roars first. It's silent first, but at the moment of the attack, there's always a noise that attributes it. And that essentially is what he says here. The Nachash, Yishach HaNachash, B'la Lachash, says nothing. Not a word. Ve'en Yitron L'Baal HaLashon, there's no advantage to the one who can speak a great deal. Speaking means doesn't give you an advantage. Sometimes silence is the advantage. Remember what we said before about Siman L'Chochma Shtika? That the sign of the wise is silence? To whom is he referring? We shall see. And then he goes on and he says, Divrei Pi Chacham Chen. When the wise speaks, he speaks words of chen, beauty, significance, meaning. V'siftot ksil, t'valenu. But the words of the fool consume him. T'chilat divrei fi sichlut v'achrit piu halelut ra. He opens up his mouth initially and he says foolish things. He closes his mouth. At the end of the day, he says foolish things. Every time he opens his mouth, the fool puts his foot in it. Not only does he do that, but he says many things. He keeps talking and yakking and yakking and yakking. Who is he referring to here? Who's he talking about? No? Who's he talking about? Right. The Sachal. Who's his Sachal? Who's his Ksil? The Nene, right? Except that's a little odd. Why is it odd? Because we finished with the Ksil. We finished with the Nene. We went on to the Amal. Then we finished with the Amal, and now he's back to the Ksil. So that's an oddity. Now take a look at Pasuk Yudalit. השכל ירבה דברים. לא ידע האדם מה שיהיה ואשר יהיה מאחריו מי יגיד לו. The fool says many things. What does a man know of what will be? Who will bring a man to know what will be after him? It's what I call the classic non sequitur. What does part B of this sentence have to do with part A? Before I figure out who it's a reference back to, explain to me the grammatical structure of this verse. What does part B have to do with part A? V'yasachal yarbe dvarim. Lo yeda ha'adam ma yeh v'asher yeh me'achrav mi yagid lo. The fool says many things. Man cannot know what will be after him, who will make it known to him.
Does that mean the fool talks a lot but doesn't know what he's talking about?
Maybe. Try this one for size. What did I just do? Remember that in biblical, in Tanakh, there are no vowels. There are no punctuation marks. So what did I add? Punctuation. Same pasuk, right? Now read it. Vasachal yarbe dvarim, colon. Open quotation marks. Lo yeda ha'adam ma'yev asheyem mi'achavav mi'agid lo close quotation marks. Now read it. What have I just done? What's the difference between the way I read it the first time and the way I just read it now? This statement, this phrase, "Lo yeda ha'adam ma'yeh v'asher yeh me'acharav mi'agid lo," is not the words of the Chacham. It's the words of the Ksil, whom the Chacham is quoting. This fool, whoever it is, speaks many things. The wise man speaks wise words, speaks beautiful words, succinct, brief. Well, I'm not quite sure why it's brief, considering how much he's yakking. But anyway, the Chacham speaks words that are divrei chen, whereas the Sachal, tchilat divrei piu sichlut, he opens his mouth and he speaks folly, and he closes his mouth and he speaks folly. Ve'acharit piu halilut ra'ah, ha'sachal yarbe dvarim, he speaks many things, such as the kind of narishkeit and silly foolishness, such as the statement, "Lo yem adam ma yev asher yem me'acharav mi yagid lo." What kind of foolish narishkeit is that? That's classic example of the sachal who speaks many words of stupidity and foolishness. Understand? Okay. So now I have an answer to my question: who's the ksil? Because he's just quoted the ksil. Correct? He just took a quote right out of the seal's mouth. So all I need to find is the location of that quote, and I know exactly who the Chacham is referring to as the second seal, or second fool, right? Right. So take a look at Perek Chet. Back to the Neum of the Yirei Elokim, Perek Chet, Pasuk Zayin. Starting with Pasuk Vav, Ki l'chol chefetz is etu mishpat, ki da'at ha'adam rabalav, God will take everything into account, God will bring judgment to everything, ki enenu yodea ma sheyiyeh, man doesn't know what will be, ki kasher yiyeh, mi agid lo, when it will be, who's going to make him know about it? Can't know the future. That's God's domain. Is that not the quote? Lo yada adam mayev asher yeh me'achav mi'agid lo. So who's my seal? So my wise, intellectual, philosophical chacham has now blasted his way through the Nehneh, the Amal, and the Yirei Elokim, all on the pretense of arguing what? Say it louder.
They talk too much.
They talk too much. They say too much. They say foolishness. Right? They say things that are lack of substance. And what's his angst? What's his angst? Who cares if they say too much? But what's his angst? What's bothering him?
I don't know. Everybody listens. People listen to
them. That they're in charge. They're running this world. Everybody else is running this world except the one person who should be running this world. But a world run by fools, builders, creators, people amassing wealth without substance, people amassing food without understanding why, people sitting and wasting their days away in synagogues and churches without understanding how to enjoy how to put meaning into this world. Everybody in this world is running the show except him. He's the only one who should be. Okay.
You're saying an example of the fool speaking is the statement, but that statement is true. Even the Chacham would have to admit that. I don't know who's going to win the Kentucky Derby.
Might be true, but it's also...
So that isn't true. I mean, he can mock him, but that is true. So is the fact that this
tablecloth is blue, but it's irrelevant. Right? The fact that something is true doesn't make it wise. If I look at the sentence by it and of itself, I take it out of its context, and I look at it as a single statement, it might be true, but it's also absurd. It's also irrelevant. It's like the ultimate truism. It means nothing. To the Yerei Elokim, it meant a great deal. It meant that you're not in control. Remember who he was speaking to. You're not in control, and therefore, you don't have to. Ultimately, God will judge the world. God who runs the world, God will hold the world accountable for their actions. But that's not the context here. This sentence is void of context. This sentence says something that is absolutely true but irrelevant. You know, like the story of the two men in the hot air balloon. You know the story of the two men in the hot air balloon?
Yeah.
No, the two men, they're in a hot air balloon and they're completely lost. This is an anti-rabbi joke, so just be prepared. Right? And they're in a hot air balloon and the clouds cover and they don't know where they are, and suddenly there's a break in the clouds and they look down and the guy yells and he says, "Hey, down there!" And he sees a guy in the golf course and he says, "Where am I?" And the guy looks up and he says, "You're in a hot air balloon!" And the clouds cover over again and turns to the other and he says, I heard this joke about rabbis, but you can fill in the blank. He says, the guy down there, he was a rabbi. Why was he a rabbi? He says, because what he said was absolutely true, but totally irrelevant. Right? Sometimes you can say things that are very true, but they're completely irrelevant. If you take the sentence out of context, it's meaningless. Excuse me? Yeah.
You could be in the rumor of the universe, and guess what? Tomorrow, you're struck by lightning. So it isn't there. I mean,
it's meaningful in context, right? Because in context, that's what the Yerei Elokim is saying. So it's meaningful in context. But that's the trick that the Chacham plays. He takes the sentence out of context and he quotes them. Politicians do this all the time. Right? Take a sentence out of context, quote it, and suddenly it becomes irrelevant and meaningless. But that's essentially what he's doing here. That's catching him at his game. That's catching him at his game. All right, we missed the last piece of it. We are up to the last tirade about ruling and power, but we've run out of time, so we will have to start with that piece, Bezrat Hashem, next week. And as I said, next week we will start at 8:30 in order to accommodate the time of Menachem. We'll just shorten the shiur. We'll go from 8:30 to 9:30. Mm.